On Tech News Today, the NSA's big SIM card hack isn't as bad as we thought. Plus, Medium gets more social networking and blogging features. And Reddit joins Google in its quest to cover up naked people. We've got three of the most brilliant journalists in technology joining us today, so stick around. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, February 25th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin, and joining us as co-anchor today is After Nine's content czar, Joe Panettiere. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing great, Mike. How you been?
I've been great. You know, it occurred to me this morning as I was getting ready for the show that you're literally the only czar I know. And it's just
the only living czar also. So that's always nice.
All the other czars are dead that I know. Well, anyway, thank you for jumping on. I know you jumped on at the last minute today, but it's going to be an exciting show because we have amazing news and two really fantastic journalists to interview. So why don't we jump right into the news? We reported to you Friday about the NSA and GCHQ's ability to monitor much of the world's mobile phone activity by hacking a European SIM card maker called Gemalto, which makes about 2 billion SIM cards a year. But now the company is saying that the security threat isn't quite what it seems. Stephen Shanklin is a senior writer for CNET News and joins us now from Paris. Welcome to you, Stephen Shanklin.
Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for being here. You're always a great guest. Now, did the NSA and GCHQ give themselves the ability to monitor all phone calls taking place through Gemalto SIM cards, or did something else actually happen? What happened there?
In Gemalto's view, no, they did not. So they had a lot of downplaying to do today at Gemalto. The CEO was on stage at a very well-attended press conference in Paris. A lot of curiosity about this particular case. And basically what Gemalto said was the attacks likely did take place from the National Security Agency in the United States and government communications headquarters in the UK, but there was no way that it could have resulted in a large-scale theft of SIM card encryption keys. So the SIM cards are these little pieces of plastic that fit into your phone. They've got a little chip on there that's used to identify the phone on the network, to authenticate it on the network so you don't have to type in a password. And they're also used in encryption so that your voice communications and your data communications are encrypted. Basically, what Gemalto said was it's possible that some keys were stolen, but it would be a limited number. If you did steal them, you couldn't do mass surveillance of lots of cell phones. And if you did, it would only work with old 2G networks. It wouldn't work with 3G networks or 4G networks. So basically, they said, yes, the spy agencies probably did try to hack them, but the severity of any of those attacks was pretty low.
Hey, Stephen, did Gemalto drop any hints in terms of other SIM card makers potentially being targeted here? What's the story there?
They did not point any fingers, but they did say that some of the evidence that The Intercept pointed to last week from the Edward Snowden leaked documents said that, you know, there were various carriers involved and various countries involved. And some of those carriers Gemalto has no relationship with. So it's clear that some of the keys could not have been obtained from Gemalto. For example, there was one in Somalia that had 300,000 encryption keys allegedly stolen. Gemalto doesn't sell any SIM cards to Somalia, so it couldn't have been them. So clearly, it's possible that there are other SIM card vendors that could be in the loop, or it could also be that there were other sources of attack.
Now, a leaked slide from the UK's GCHQ said that they had, quote, successfully implanted several machines and believe we have their entire network, unquote. They're referring to Gemalto's network. First of all, was that true or not? I mean, is that an accurate thing that whoever was making this presentation was saying there? And second of all, do you see this as yet another case where the NSA and also in this case the GCHQ has it the worst of all possible scenarios? On the one hand, the public is unhappy with them because it thinks that they are listening to every single call through this hack. On the other hand, they're not actually listening to every single call. They have the bad reputation without the benefits of having done the thing that the bad reputation suggests that they've done. So you see this across the board with these Snowden revelations, and it seems to me like there's tons and tons of bragging, and a lot of this information coming from Snowden is a lot of bragging internally. But in this case particularly, with this particular claim from the GCHQ, do you think that that slide was accurate or not accurate?
Well, I don't, of course, have any inside information about what the NSA actually did, and the GCHQ, by the way. That slide was from the GCHQ. Gemalto says that it was bogus. They did not get access to the internal networks. So they said they did detect two very sophisticated attacks in 2010 and 2011, but it detected them and it thwarted them. One of them was an attack on a French division of Gemalto, and they said they detected that. It was sophisticated, but it didn't work. And the other one was a spoofed email allegedly from Gemalto, not actually from Gemalto, but pretending to be from Gemalto, to one of Gemalto's customers, and that had a malicious attachment. So if somebody had opened that attachment, it would have downloaded some malware and, you know, tried to attack a system. They detected that too. Now, it's quite possible that there were other attacks that they did not detect. But that's the first point. The second point is these attacks were on the relatively public internet accessible network that Gemalto uses. And they say they have their network is partitioned into separate sections. And the section that is involved with SIM card encryption keys is totally separate. So even if you were to hack that network, you wouldn't get access. In response to your second question, yes, certainly the NSA and the GCHQ are getting kind of dragged through the mud here. There's a lot of bad PR for them invading people's privacy and overreaching. But I think, you know, I think it kind of on average, it balances out, because although there might be some bragging here, there might be some PowerPoint that is not entirely accurate. Heaven knows I've seen a lot of PowerPoint in my career and not all of it is 100% true. There's a lot of marketing hype out there, and I'm sure that NSA is not immune to it. But so you know, they probably get a worse rap than they ought to get in some cases. But on the other hand, they definitely are being very aggressive. And this particular program shows that regardless of their success rate with Gemalto and other SIM card makers and other carriers, they certainly tried very hard to use this avenue of attack. And, you know, the more successful they were, the easier time they would have bypassing whatever judicially approved, judicially authorized mechanisms like search warrants, the easier time they would have bypassing those mechanisms. So, you know, I think kind of on average, it's a wash for them.
Well, it appears that they have done some damage to the United States technology sector. We learned yesterday that the Chinese government has stopped buying from a range of companies because of, they claim, NSA, fear of NSA spying, and those include Cisco, Apple, and others. And so there is potentially some damage there, it appears. Stephen Shanklin is at CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at STShank. Thank you so much for joining us today, Stephen.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
All right. Well, we want to hear what you think about this story and about NSA hacking and GCHQ hacking. In general, just send us an email to tnt@twit.tv. We want to hear your views on all this. We got some news for you in just a sec, but first, let's talk about Gazelle. Now, of course, Gazelle has always been a place where you can sell your old gadget so you can get some money for your next gadget, for your new gadget. But now, nowadays, Gazelle will actually sell to you directly. And everything that they sell has a Gazelle certified certification, if you will. It's always a great deal. They have no contracts or strings attached of any kind. They have a 30-point quality inspection. So even though these devices have been previously owned, they've inspected it to make sure that they are just flawless, and they have a 30-day risk-free return policy. It's really a great place to buy something. You know, everybody has a budget. We all can't go out and buy the highest price phone that's out there. We have basically say to ourselves, okay, I have this much money to spend. And if you take that money and buy from Gazelle, you're going to get a better device because the prices are lower than brand new devices. And examples of what they sell include the iPad mini, the iPhone 5, the iPad 2, the iPhone 4S. You can go back as far as you like, and the further back you go, of course, the lower cost that device will be. And of course, they have two levels of phones and devices that they sell. One of them is certified like new, which means that it's just like a brand new phone. The other one is certified good, which has general signs of wear, but of course, functions perfectly. And again, Gazelle is the best place to sell a gadget. Find out what your iPhone's worth, take a minute, and go to gazelle.com to find out. Former Twitter CEO Evan Williams launched the site Medium in 2012, and since then the site has been a place for long-form articles, but I wouldn't have called it a blogging platform, except now maybe I will call it a blogging platform. The company rolled out some changes yesterday that transform what Medium is and how it works. Matthew Ingram is a senior writer for GigaOM and joins us now to talk about the changes at Medium. Welcome to you, Matthew Ingram.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I apologize for the boarding announcement. I'm sitting in the airport in Detroit.
Yeah, you're on a stopover, and we appreciate you jumping on the show today in en route to the West Coast, where I imagine it's warmer than wherever it is you were before you got to Detroit, and certainly warmer than Detroit. Now, what new features did Medium announce exactly?
Well, the most interesting, I think, is one that seems very Twitter-like. It's basically an instant post feature. So right on the homepage at the top, when you're logged in, there's a little box, and it just says right here. And so you can start typing. You can post whatever you type instantly. It shows up on your page. It shows up to anyone who's following you. So it's a Twitter-like feature. Before, you had to create a whole long post, you know, and find images, and then it took a long time to publish. It's obviously aimed at the much broader kind of in between Twitter and a long blog post.
Hey, Matthew, can you tell me a little bit about the business model here? I'm just a little confused, Chris. As I understand it, I think some people pay for long form articles, and now you've got this Twitter approach you're talking about. Are they like Blogger? Are they like a magazine? Are they like the Huffington Post? Something else? How would you describe it at this point?
Yeah, I guess I would describe it as they would like to be all of those things. I mean, Evan Williams said that one of the reasons they launched this feature was they wanted that people thought of them as a place where you just write really long articles, and they didn't want to just be a place where you write really long magazine-type articles. He said they want to do all those things. They want to do short, they want to do medium, they want to do long, they want to have magazine-style features, but they also want to have, you know, briefer thoughts, business model. There isn't one, as to my knowledge. So the business model at the moment is, you know, it's VC funded. Evan Williams is a billionaire, and so he's trying to build this product and build an audience. I don't think they've really attacked the sort of monetization end yet.
Now, you write very brilliantly on journalism in general and technology journalism in particular. What is your personal opinion of the new Medium as a place for journalists to write? And if it's not ideal for journalists, who is this site perfectly suited for, if anyone?
I guess for journalists, you know, it's great to have a place like Medium if you don't run your own blog, for example. It's great to have a place where you can reach new readers. It's great to have a place that makes writing so easy. Their writing tool is fantastically simple. The risk, of course, is that Medium is a platform just like Facebook or Twitter, and so you're effectively hosting your stuff on their platform. You own content, obviously, but you're sort of giving up something to that platform as opposed to running your own site. I think for anyone who wants to write and doesn't have a place to write, it's a great competitor for things like Huffington Post. It's really easy to write. There's a potential to reach a new audience. It's quite a great site, actually. I'm a big fan.
Now, I'll ask you one more quick question, and we'll get you off to your flight. To what extent does Medium do algorithmic sorting? I was actually surprised to learn that in your article that they do some algorithmic sorting. Can you describe where they do it and how they do it?
So the other feature they launched in addition to the Twitter style short post is they're using tagging instead of what they used to use, which was channels. So there would be a channel called tech, there'd be a channel called entertainment, and you could either add your post to that channel or an editor would add a post to a channel. Now they're relying on tags. So whatever you tag your post, if someone searches that tag, your post will show up. But it's also, my understanding is, it's also those tags are going to filter based on which posts are getting shared a lot. So if you check the tech tag, then you'll see posts that have been getting shared a lot.
Matthew Ingram is at GigaOhm.com. You should and can follow him on Twitter as well at Matthew I. That's I for Ingram. And, of course, Matthew has one T. Thank you so much for joining us, Matthew Ingram. All right. Skype is out to get us again. Just because we're paranoid doesn't mean Skype isn't out to get us. If you have an experience with Medium you'd like to share as either a reader or a blogger or a journalist or in any capacity, let us know what your experience has been at tnt@twit.tv, or you can call our number, which we'll give at the end of the show. We told you yesterday that Google was cracking down on naked people on Blogger, the company's blogging platform. Starting on March 23rd, any blog on the site with sexually explicit or graphic nude images will be auto-converted to private status, which means blog administrators will need to grant permission to each and every visitor. Plus, Google won't accept new blogs after March 23rd that contain nudity. Well, after our show ended yesterday, Reddit announced that they, too, are cracking down on the clothing challenged. Their new policy says that any pictures showing sexual acts or nudity can be posted only with the explicit consent of the people in the pictures. The move comes in the wake of multiple scandals involving pictures of underage models and also the posting of stolen private pictures of dozens of celebrities. Joe Panettiere, we talked about this a little bit yesterday when we were talking about the Google story, and we brought up the idea that, you know, Tumblr, which is owned by Yahoo, of course, is now one of the last bastions for pornography in a blogging context. Of course, Reddit is not a blog, so that's not in the same category as Blogger. But still, we saw this with effective troll controls when sites continued to implement better troll controls. All the trolls went to the remaining sites. So now it seems likely that a lot of people who are posting pornography are going to go to Tumblr, and then that may or may not create a problem for Yahoo. Do you have any sense about Yahoo's corporate culture, about Marissa Meyer, and what they're going to do about this?
Well, I was shocked when they bought Tumblr in the first place because the problem was already there. It's not like Tumblr is some sort of new destination for all these migrants, let's call them. I mean, I don't know what percentage of traffic comes from quote-unquote adult content or porn over on Tumblr, but it's got to be huge. And you got to wonder what type of due diligence Yahoo did as part of that deal to buy Tumblr. What exactly did they acquire other than this training ground for the next generation of porn, so to speak? And I know there's other good content on Tumblr, don't get me wrong, but there just seems to be no gateway at all. It's the wild, wild west over there. So I think Yahoo's going to have to answer for this longer term. And I shouldn't even say longer term. It's going to be near term.
And Twitter as well. Twitter is another site where they don't even try to ban anything. And again, you know, whether sites, you know, I think the important thing is that there are sites for every type of content. Some people want a site. Want to go to a website where they're not going to stumble across objectionable material or materials objectionable to them. Other people do. And so, you know, we want to make sure that there's plenty of choice out there. But I just think it's an interesting dynamic, especially, I think that Reddit is a little bit more just like Reddit is growing up. They're not banning it. They're just making sure that it's legal and also that it involves consent by the people who are in the pictures. That sounds fair enough. Google, on the other hand, is actually banning it from March 23rd onwards. And so, so it's an interesting change. It may affect, who knows, thousands of people, millions of people. I don't know how many. Blogger's a huge, huge network. And Reddit, of course, is very, very popular and has dozens of millions of users. We've got some follow-ups for you. We reported several times on the big hack of health insurance giant Anthem. At the time, we told you that some 80 million customers may have been victimized in the attack by having their personal non-medical data stolen. Now Anthem has announced that somewhere between 8.8 million and 18.8 million people who are not Anthem customers may also have been victimized. The reason is that Anthem's part of a network of independently run Blue Cross Blue Shield plans, millions of which are operated by other companies, but Anthem still has those records in its breached database. So if you are a Blue Cross Blue Shield customer, look out. Your data may be out there, so you need to check on that with your insurance company and find out what the heck happened. We got some product updates for you as well today. Microsoft said yesterday that it's removing support for Facebook Chat and Google Chat from the consumer version of Outlook. Joe Panettiere, the Google Chat elimination makes a ton of sense because Google doesn't even support that anymore. And Facebook Chat is more mysterious because, of course, Facebook and Microsoft are fairly close, have been traditionally. I think they're likely to grow apart as they increasingly compete against each other in the future. But still, what do you think they removed Facebook Chat here for?
You know, I don't know. I think we're talking about a frenemy situation here. Excuse me.
Co-opetition.
Co-opetition. And you know, let's talk about where Facebook's heading right now. Facebook is developing that business-oriented piece of their social platform. And Microsoft already owns, Yammer. And so, you know, these two are on a collision course when it comes to social enterprise communications. So Microsoft, on the one hand, we have spoken in recent shows talking about how more and more cross-platform they're becoming and more open they're becoming. But I think there's going to be instances here where they knock off some support here and there for their frenemies where they feel like the competition's getting a little bit too fierce.
Yeah, I think you're right. In mergers and acquisitions news, Google has acquired a company called Toro, which helps developers promote their apps on Facebook. The company used to be called Red Hot Labs. The Google acquisition means that while Toro will continue to optimize campaigns and provide reports for existing customers, it won't accept new customers who want to promote on Facebook. Instead, Toro staff will join Google's mobile ads team. Joe Panettiere, this looks to me like an acquihire, I think, and also the added benefit of it kind of screws Facebook a little bit. So, you know, it's all good for Google.
If we can grab talent and hurt a competitor, all the better. That's right. Definitely the mood.
Exactly. All right. Well, courtroom drama. Apple was ordered to pay $532.9 million after a federal jury in Texas found that iTunes infringed three patents owned by the patent troll company SmartFlash. Apple plans to appeal and said in a statement that, quote, SmartFlash makes no products, has no employees, creates no jobs, has no U.S. presence, and is exploiting our patent system to seek royalties for technology Apple invented, unquote. The trial took place in Tyler, Texas, which has in the past decade seen juries side with patent trolls on a regular basis. SmartFlash is theoretically based in Tyler, in fact, where the company is registered, but they appear to have no offices. We've got some big numbers for you today. 60. That's the percentage of the world's population that has never connected to the internet. The number comes from a new study by Facebook's internet.org organization called The State of Global Connectivity. And the other big number related to this is 90. 90% is the percentage of the world's population that is actually within range of internet connectivity in terms of cell towers and so on. So 90% could get access if they could afford it or whatever the reason is they're not getting an access, but only 40% actually gain access to the internet. That's a pretty stunning set of numbers.
Yeah, Mike, when I weigh in there, you know what's interesting there is Facebook and Google and others are working so hard to get that other 10% who you can't reach, right? So they're floating all these balloons. They're putting satellites in orbit to get that other 10%. Why don't they go after all the people who are within range but haven't turned on the on switch yet? That's what I don't understand. What are they going to do there to really drive up adoption?
To a certain extent, they do a few things. Both Google and Facebook have plans where they will subsidize data access. And again, in the kind of areas where people can't afford to get online, those types of countries have cell plans that charge for every single a byte of data that's downloaded. They do it on a, you know, per day, you know, they don't say, oh, you have unlimited or anything like that. It's not like that at all. It's actually very expensive for those people in those areas. And so they have subsidized. So as long as you're using Facebook, you know, internet.org itself and also Facebook both have programs that subsidize access to Facebook and a few other things. Google has something like that as well. And a few other companies do as well, but it's really not enough. And I agree with you. That's really the place to do it. It's probably far cheaper to just subsidize access by people who are already within range of a network than it is to have a network of balloons circling the Earth to bring network access to a remote place that doesn't even have the ability to connect. So it is a bit of a curiosity. And, you know, the upside, though, is that, you know, and it's one of the most interesting and fascinating parts of this story, is that it's getting to the point where Facebook and Google and companies like these two companies have saturated the available
people, the user who are there. Base.
Yeah. Exactly. And they're now to the point where their incentive is not only to connect people to the internet, but to increase those people's incomes. And of course, internet access can do that by providing people with banking services, with the ability to reach other customers and so on. And so that's where I think the next phase of this type of activity is going to lie, which is actually reaching out with programs that help people who otherwise couldn't afford internet access to afford it by increasing their wealth to some extent. And that's a good thing, obviously. Well, another big number for you, $3 million. That's how many dollars the U.S. State Department is offering as a reward to anyone who provides information leading to the arrest and conviction of Russian hacker Evgeny Bogachev. The reward is the highest bounty U.S. authorities have ever offered for a computer-related criminal. He's accused of running the computer attack network Game Over Zeus, which allegedly stole more than $100 million from online bank accounts as well as other crimes. Yeah, I didn't know they still had wanted posters. Dead or alive.
Yeah, offline wanted posters for the most wanted cyber criminal ever. So, yeah, I don't know if anyone in the post office is going to turn this guy in, but
exactly. It looks like Uncle Fester.
Yeah.
So, you heard it here first, folks. Uncle Fester's wanted for cybercrime. 96.3. That's the percentage of the global smartphone market now owned by Android and iOS, up slightly from last year, according to IDC. Android now owns 78.7% of the global smartphone market. iOS has 15.1%. Windows Phone has 3.3%. BlackBerry has 1.9%. And the rest of the industry splits 0.2%. The dominance of iOS and Android, especially Android, is really getting incredible. I mean, part of it is how much of the pie they have. And the other part of it is how much bigger the pie itself is growing.
Right. And the other piece of it, Mike, is where are the profits in that pie? And it sounds like the smartphone industry is starting to look a whole lot like the PC industry. And what I mean by that is, well, the Windows players have most of the pie, but Apple's got most of the profits with Mac. And I think Android and iOS are increasingly like that.
Yeah, and that's, of course, the sweet spot of the market. Their dominance in the profit area has really skyrocketed. It's hard to say at this point whether that is the result of a really stellar fourth quarter where Apple is going gangbusters in China, et cetera. Meanwhile, Samsung, the other profit leader, was having a kind of a bad fourth quarter. We don't know how much, in other words, we don't know how much of this is temporary, but at least in the fourth quarter of 2014, Apple just killed it in terms of profits. I mean, their dominance was absolutely unparalleled. And of course, their valuation as a company is now more than twice that of ExxonMobil. All right, another gigantic number for you, 1,000. That's how many Google Chrome experiments have been created to date. Google itself created the 1,000th Chrome experiment to highlight the milestone. Launched in 2009, Chrome experiments exist, according to Google, to showcase the work of creative coders who want to push the limits of HTML5 and JavaScript. Google also announced that they've redesigned the ChromeExperiments.com website. And Google's new Chrome experiment is an interactive interface to the other 999 experiments. Let's have a look at that and go ahead and crank up the sound there, Jason. This is really cool. And each one of those little floating bubbles, we're looking at the number 1,000 that's made out of these. It's a little bit like an acid trip, really. There's like floating bubbles that are like flying around. And if you click on any of those, and you can go ahead and click on one randomly, Jason, it'll take you to the experiment that it represents. And some of these are really, really cool experiments. Other ones are, you know, less cool. But mostly, these are developers who were trying things that you don't normally see on websites. It's really cool. Now, right now, what we're looking at on the video version of this show is that Jason has grabbed some kind of bizarre squid alien creature and is dragging it around mercilessly across the screen. Very weird. But
yeah, you know what I love about this, Mike, is it really is in a Google's making an inclusive approach here. And what I mean by that is I have a niece who's actually still in high school, and she just got accepted into a summer college program. It'll be 2 weeks, but it's this type of thing. Google is actually involved in the program. There's all sorts of coding that she'll be doing. And if you look at the classroom and who's been accepted into this, it's kids from all walks of life. So it's great to see Google working in this area and attracting so many different people to the conversation.
It certainly is. And again, that website that they designed is really, really cool. I love it when Google does stuff like that. They're really good at that kind of thing. Well, in news you could lose, whiskey bottles are the latest product to get the NFC treatment. The booze company Diageo, I think is how you pronounce it, and the Norwegian printing electronics firm Thin Film will showcase at Mobile World Congress next week a prototype connected bottle for Johnnie Walker Blue Label whiskey with NFC tags built into the label. Thin Film claims that its smart labels are nearly impossible to copy or modify. We'll see about that. The tags offer different benefits depending on the situation. For the store, for example, running a store-specific app, NFC tags can offer stock control and anti-counterfeiting protection. Consumers can use the very same tags to get promotional discounts in the store, but once the bottle is purchased and brought home, the tags can offer cocktail recipes and other content. Very cool stuff. And finally, Samsung mocked the culture of fan designs for future phones by creating a few of its own. A new website from Samsung's Norwegian team trotted out these wild concepts for the Galaxy S6, none of which are anything like the actual Galaxy S6, and they know it. Let's take a look at some of these concepts. There's a clear, invisible, semi-invisible phone, the Wonder Woman phone or something. There's a curved phone that's just way too curved. If you go in the other direction, we'll see the rest of those. There's probably about five or six of these things, pretty cool phones, and some of them. That one is really ridiculous. It's like The Office, you know, with the triangular tablet. In this case, it's a kind of triangular shaped phone. Here's one that's on a pillow of some kind. Very weird. And here's one that has wings. Looks like a Yeah, the speakers fold out, and so it looks like a ladybug with speaker wings. Oh, wow. Yeah, very cool, sort of. Well, we got some feedback for you. We got email from Neil Fildes, I hope I'm saying his name right, and he wrote the following to us. He said, I don't know how Yahoo, et cetera, should handle this request for access to encrypted communication, but I do believe that the NSA cannot be trusted to interpret the law for themselves. They're referring specifically to the story we covered yesterday where a representative from Yahoo essentially grilled the NSA director about their desire to have backdoors into Yahoo encrypting communications. Clearly, they've shown that they're not trustworthy, and you can tell that they are lying because their lips are moving. Wow. Some searing cynicism there from TNT fan Neil Fildes. Very, very cool stuff. We're going to wrap up the show in just a sec, but first I want to tell you about our other sponsor, Blue Apron. Blue Apron is a fantastic service that will send to your door amazing ready-to-cook meals. They don't cook them for you. They don't spoil that for you. They make it easy for you to cook them yourself, so the food is super, super fresh, better than restaurant quality. I've judged this for myself. I've made a whole bunch of these, and I'm a weekly subscriber. Really fantastic. It makes me feel like a really great cook. And the most important part for me is that I got a house full of really, really particular eaters who have really, really good taste in food. And they're very difficult to please when it comes to food. But every single Blue Apron meal, and of course, every meal is a different meal. They never send you the same meal twice, has been a total crowd pleaser at my house. Really great stuff. Exotic foods, very American foods, you name it, it's all over the map. Really cool Asian foods. And a lot of the times when you make foods that are originate in other countries, from Thailand, from Mexico, from China, from various parts around the world, they're going to require ingredients that you're not going to have in your house. Many of us don't even live in an area where you can find stores that sell these ingredients. But Blue Apron will send you exactly the amount of those exotic ingredients that you need to make their recipes, and it's super, super easy to do. They give you this card, one for each recipe. The box that I get for the subscription has three meals in it. Each meal serves two people, although it serves three people. I mean, there's extra. We always have leftovers, which is kind of nice. And you just follow the step-by-step instructions, and you end up with this fantastic meal. You know, when I first heard about Blue Apron, I thought, you know, it's like, it's they make you do the cooking, you know, so it doesn't say, but then when I tried it, I realized this is like the best of all possible worlds. You get to make the recipes, but you don't have to go through the difficult process of following a regular recipe. It's super, super easy. You don't have to do the shopping. You don't have to even think that much, which after a long day, I think is really great. I don't want to have to think too much about making dinner. So if you want to try it, and I really, really recommend that you try it, we're going to let you try two free meals. Blue Apron is a better way to cook, and you can check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. Two meals free just for going to blueapron.com. Don't forget the /twit part at the end. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. And when you get those two free meals, shoot me an email. Let me know what you think of it. Love to hear how you like Blue Apron. I know you're going to love it. So check it out. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. Our TNT fan of the day is Craig Jerdingen in St. Paul, Minnesota, who posted this picture on Google Plus of himself listening to Tech News Today while commuting to work in the bitter, freezing cold on a fat tire bike. A fat tire bike is a bike with big fat tires. This, that looks cold. That looks really, really cold. I was freaking out yesterday because when I got up in the morning, it was 34 degrees outside. Joe, you're going to scoff at that. And of course, this guy's going to scoff at both of us because he rides his bike in Minnesota.
Yeah, St. Paul.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. His bike is cool. I looked at his Google Plus profile. He's got a bunch of pictures of him riding through forest, through snow, whatever, on this bike. I got to check one of those out. I've never ridden one. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, or Instagram, or anywhere. We'll find it as long as you use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT. And Joe Panettiere, I want to thank you for jumping on the show and co-anchoring today. Great job as always. Can you tell us what's going on with your company?
Absolutely. Over on After Nines, if our listeners or viewers go check out www.afternines.com/CEO, you're going to find our latest podcast, and that features 17 Hats CEO Donovan Janis. And he describes how solopreneurs, that single person companies, can really automate everything from sales to marketing to invoicing and et cetera. You know, it's really about empowering that single person company to really automate everything. And that is what Donovan's describing. Plus, he also talks a little bit about the $1.25 million he just raised in seed funding. So that's what's cooking this week. And then longer term, we actually we broke ground actually on some software development work, but it's going to be several months before we pull back the curtain on that.
Yeah, it always takes longer than you want it to, but is the nature of building brilliant software and websites and all that stuff. Well, thank you so much, Joe Panettiere. You'll see Joe on this show next week. Again, Joe, thanks for joining us as co-anchor today.
Always good to see you, Mike. Take care.
All right. You can subscribe, and you should subscribe to Tech News Today on iTunes, or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv, or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. If you're ever near the Brick House in Petaluma, California, come on in and watch us live. We love to see you here. And you can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. You can also follow me personally on Vine. Just go to vine.co/Mike.Elgin and let us know what you think in general or specifically about the stuff we covered. Send us an email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.